This is Up Front on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganya. Now, April 2nd is World Autism Day. And autism spectrum disorder, or just autism as we know it in common parlance, is said to be one of the most common neurodevelopmental disorders. That's according to the WHO. The WHO further documents that autism affects one out of every 160 children. But as prevalent as it is in mostly developed countries, autism is also one of the least known global health issues. There has not been enough research or the kind of body of work in terms of research terms, body of knowledge about this condition. The good news is that that is changing, partly because people are now talking about autism. There's more research targeting autism, but it's obvious that there's a lot more to learn about this condition. And it's also important to note, rather obviously, that the lack of knowledge about autism, a non-communicable disease, is much more amplified in Africa, where public health systems are struggling to deal with communicable diseases like TB and many others, let alone a more complex issue like this one. So one of the consequences of our lack of understanding of autism, including its symptoms and ways to treat it, is that people with autism and their families are faced with the stress of dealing with a child with a neurodevelopment disorder while at the same time dealing with the ignorance and social stigma around autism. But like I said earlier, things are suddenly getting better, at least in terms of mobilizing resources and directing some of those resources towards more research on autism. And this will go a long way in giving us a better understanding of autism. It will also help change some of the existing attitudes towards this condition. More health professionals and activists, including my guest today, Susan Gakwavu, are working to bring more attention to autism in Africa. She joins me in studio.
First of all, autism, like you said, is something that people have not really touched, and it's becoming an issue here in the United States and even in Africa. And having been into the autism society and working with children with autism, I developed a passion and had to go back home and open the foundation or a program for those children.
Okay. When did you get interested in this? When did you start? Is there a personal connection to this issue?
Yes, I would say that actually there is a personal issue. Growing up, having a sister who had the same issue, watching my mother doing what she was doing, and the awareness and education and what to do was lacking. And I believe that they didn't have anything, you know, to do with that, even knowing the particular, you know, disease or sickness. So coming in America 15 years ago, you know, I went into a program, and someone introduced me into autism, and that's where my passion and my journey
began.
You gained
interest in that. Was she officially diagnosed by a doctor?
Actually, no, but having worked with children now, I can relate.
You can tell.
Yes, I can relate
that
it's the same. Exactly. So,
where is she right now? Is your sister?
My sister died at the age
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, at age of 26. And actually, I think one of the reasons why she died that early is because of lack of information.
Right. So there's a general ignorance.
Exactly.
About autism. Right.
But
well, what are some of the misconceptions around autism?
Around autism, you know, autism. Right now, I would say that at the age of 3 or 4, people or parents can know that my son has autism or Down syndrome. But during that time, it was nothing like that. So for me, when it comes to my sister, she developed this at the age of 14. And I wish if we had known that, probably if we had doctors and we would see the changes, probably they would have detected it at the early age. And because of lack of medication, she developed seizures and she ended up dying. So I think right now where we are, I thank people who are coming out, bringing out awareness and speaking every day about autism. And I think when we speak and get parents involved, the chance of getting them into a better life is high.
Okay, so your sister's condition, situation led you onto this path, or inspired you to get to become an activist for autism, and you founded a foundation based in Uganda right now. Tell us about some of the things that you do and you're doing right now and you hope to do in the future.
Yeah, actually when I started, I didn't even remember about my sister, but it's during that journey of working with them in California, and I remembered, you know, how my sister was, and I'm like, you know what, this is the same thing, you know, the same disease.
You worked with autistic people.
Yes, and I'm still working.
People with autism in California.
Yes.
Are you a healthcare professional?
I am an applied behavior analysis.
Okay.
So it's where I really developed a feeling that, you know, there are so many people in Africa
right.
that are being
so
affected.
You were doing this in California,
in
but
California.
You felt that there was a greater need in Africa
yes.
to focus, to highlight
exactly.
this issue.
To bring the awareness, to speak. And that's where my journey with New Life Foundation started.
What happens to a kid when they have autism in say, growing up in Uganda or in East Africa or any part of Africa right now?
Yeah, in most cases, parents don't even know what autism is. Some of them think maybe the kids are cursed or bewitched.
Mm.
And, you know, what they do, they keep them indoors, you know. And part of that probably is because they don't know what to do, you know. And most of them are single mothers who have really, the men, the husband have abandoned them because they believe in
the witchcraft
or the woman is cursed or, you know, so many things like that. But, you know, as we go on with awareness, as we come out and speak about it, we are really seeing a big, big change with the parents and also the children.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a general change in attitudes.
In attitudes and also accepting.
Right.
You know, accepting that it's autism. This kid, as much as he's different, but he or she has a special skills.
Right.
We can, you know, work on that and develop and make a difference.
That those are some of the things that you can do outside of the healthcare system.
Exactly.
But how strong are the healthcare systems in the affected countries that your foundation is working in terms of dealing with autism?
Exactly. Again, the healthcare on autism, I wouldn't say that it's good, because we are struggling to find the doctors who can diagnose these children and to say that, you know, this child is autistic or this child has a Down syndrome. And this is where we are calling upon, you know, the government or Minister of Health, you know, to come on board and try to help these parents with their children.
The World Health Organization says that even though there is no known cure for autism, there are various interventions available to healthcare professionals and caretakers of children with autism. That's when the child is diagnosed early on in life. And some research has shown that these interventions can lead to an improvement in the quality of life for people with autism and their families. Gakwavu tells me that it would take resources. However, even the little resources that are available are not known to the people who need them the most.
Let me talk about Autism Society. Autism Society is a big society where they can really come into a country and help set up and train, but then they need a special invitation from Minister of Education or Minister of Health. So when they come, definitely they carry many.
So the Autism Society is an international organization based here in the U.S.?
Yes.
And you're saying that the only way they can make an entry into a healthcare system of any country is that they have to be invited.
Exactly.
Do people in the healthcare ministry, for example, know that they need to ask?
And actually, that's where New Life Foundation and other foundation comes in to speak out, to reach out into the Minister of Education, Minister of Health, to bring out the awareness.
To create those linkages.
To create the linkages, because most of them don't even know. Even in Minister of Health, they don't know what autism is.
Mm.
Probably they know, but they tend to not focus on it because they don't see people coming out
right.
and speaking about it.
Is there treatment for autism?
There's no treatment. as of now, but we have things we can do to make them better people.
Do we know what causes autism?
Not at this point.
The science is not yet there.
Not yet.
Research is still ongoing on what causes autism.
Yes, and that's why we are trying to come up with this conference, like the one in Nairobi, in April. We are bringing in all African countries, and we are bringing in researchers, educators, you know, doctors, to speak and to let people know what's happening, especially we in Africa, whereby we don't get this kind of conference to talk about autism. So I think...
So you have, let me just make sure that people get it. You have a Pan-African conference on autism that is happening, taking place, that you're organizing in Nairobi in this year, 2019, April?
Yes.
You said April?
Yes.
Okay. And you're bringing in healthcare professionals and other individuals that are connected to autism.
Yes. A parent, therapist. So we are calling upon Africans, you know, we're expecting over 40 countries, African countries, to come together and learn and share and talk about autism in our continent. Because as much as we live here and we work with children here, but we also have our own children back home and things which are different. But again, we have people who are really into that field that we have to team up and try to make a difference.
Right. Susan, thank you very much for coming in today. We wish you the best of luck as you bring attention to this very important cause, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront of the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. So, like we explained earlier, the causes of autism are still unknown. But as many scientists around the world continue in this quest to understand the causes and ultimately how to treat autism, there has been some considerable advancements on that front, including the recent study in which scientists doing research on autism were able to identify hundreds of new genes that may play a role in the development of autism. My colleague Jessica Bowman reports that even though these researchers have not found conclusively that genes are a direct cause of autism, they say that genes do contribute to the condition, which essentially means that scientists could use gene sequencing or genes, basically look at genes in their quest towards finding the cause and possibly a treatment for autism. Let's listen to her report.
Children with autism spectrum disorder have trouble communicating, learning, and socializing with the outside world. The condition runs the spectrum from mild awkwardness to complete social isolation. So far, 65 autism risk genes have been identified, but how they disrupt the brain's natural development is still unknown. Investigators think there could be anywhere from 400 to 1,000 autism genes altogether. Using what they call a machine learning computer program, researchers at Princeton University in the United States discovered 2,500 genes they believe could play a role in ASD. The new leads were published in the journal Nature Neuroscience. A researcher at Princeton's Lewis Sigler Institute for Integrative Genomics, Arjun Krishnan, says there are 25,000 genes in the human body. To narrow down the genes within the vast brain circuitry that may contribute to the development of ASD, investigators looked at the huge array of connections among genes responsible for brain function. Krishnan likened it to finding friends on Facebook.
Facebook wanted to find out who your friends are and wanted to suggest a friend for you. What they would do is to find out who your friends are and then find out other people who are friends with those same people. And if they are, they are very likely friends with you too. So that's how they give suggestions of new friends that you might know. And we use a very, very similar strategy.
Krishnan says the machine learning program identified similarities between brain-related genes and the 65 autism risk genes, finding still other genes that are friends of both. Princeton University computer science and genomics professor Olga Troyanskaya says certain combinations of genes may explain why one child on the spectrum is mildly affected and another child is severely disabled.
A lot of evidence points to the fact that their entire set of what the rest of their genetics looks like likely has a very strong impact on what outcome that would have, both whether they would have autism and pretty much for sure what exact symptoms they would have.
There's no cure for what has become one of the most common developmental disorders to strike young children, but early intervention in the form of physical and behavioral therapies has been shown to be beneficial to youngsters with autism. Unfortunately, there's no diagnostic test beyond observation, but researchers are hoping their work could eventually lead to a way to diagnose very young children so they can be helped as soon as possible. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you very much, Jessica. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi. In case you're just joining us, we're talking about autism today on the show. There's a need to create more awareness about this condition that, according to the World Health Organization, affects one in 160 children around the world. And we know that there's no treatment. There are different therapies. We also know that it manifests itself differently in children, but we also know that there's a combination of therapies that include behavioral, educational, and family therapies that may reduce the symptoms for children with autism. That's what scientists say about this when they're talking about therapy. On the phone with me is Ruth Tenai. Ruth Tenai is the president of an organization, Step Up for Autism. She's a Kenyan who lives here in the U.S. Ruth's organization works to bring more awareness to autism in Africa. She talks to me about a conference that she's organizing in Nairobi, Kenya, a Pan-African conference on autism. She starts off by telling me how she found out that her child had autism and how she was able to deal with having a child that has autism in the family.
So at the age of 4 years old, my son is Nathan. He was diagnosed when he was 4 years old. And I didn't really know much about autism. So
okay.
He went to an institution called the Kennedy Krieger in Baltimore. That's where he got his diagnosis.
How did you know that he might have autism?
He was attending a day school where his teacher started noticing that he was always by himself, like playing by himself. But what really made me concerned was that he was losing his speech, like he stopped singing his ABCs, and that got me worried.
Okay.
But I wasn't really sure what it was. Yes.
And so the teachers told you that he might exhibit or is exhibiting,
yes,
behavior that is unlike any other four-year-old kid. Did you right away think that this is autism and that I should have him checked out?
No, I didn't, because I thought probably, it's just that he's shy. And even in speech, I thought probably, the way in African tradition we always say he's got a heavy tongue. So I thought he's just, he's going to talk at some time. It's just that he's having a tough time. So I really didn't know.
Let me ask you, as a mother of a four-year-old, what was your reaction when you found out, or when the diagnosis came back and said that he had autism?
Yeah, I didn't take it well, because when I was, I asked if there was any, you know, I thought it's just something that is, you know, teachable. I didn't really think it was something that you have to work on for a long time, you know. And it took me a while, you know, it didn't just sink in. It took months before I could really understand why, you know, the why him, because I have other kids and I wasn't understanding why him. And it really, you know, I knew it was him. I knew I had to do something about it. So I really didn't take it well in the beginning.
Okay.
Because after I heard that it wasn't really, it was manageable but not treatable.
Okay. Let me ask you this, as a parent also, as an African parent, did you know about autism previously? Had you ever heard of autism growing up in Africa? Is that something that you were able to relate to in any way?
I didn't really know about autism at all. You know, growing up, you know, I'd never heard something about that until my son was diagnosed in the U.S. So for me, it was really, you know, a challenge. And I started thinking of, you know, the community, a society. You know, I started, you know, asking questions. How would they look at my son?
Mm.
You know, I started thinking, now, will they look at me or look at my son the same way? Are they going to accept my son as he is? Or will they, you know, in our culture?
Mm. So you know,
kids are, yeah.
You were more worried about the African. You were more worried about the social stigma that people with autism face.
Yes, I was. Actually, I remember the first time I traveled with him, you know, there were the stairs, you know, and they'll be like asking me, you know, well, who did this to him? So I was always trying to explain that nobody did anything to him because of that stereotype that the kid is, you know, they've been, you know, they've been witchcraft or something, you know. So it was really hard for, especially the older people. They found it like the grandparents are really like trying to ask so many questions. But I found that the younger generation were more accepting, and actually families are really, it was hard for families. Like they would be like, oh, we don't have such a kid in our family, so I don't know what happened. You know, they make it really difficult just to have your kid accepted in the society.
Did the kids' grandparents or the old people you're talking about in your family, did they prescribe any traditional interventions?
Well, they were always praying. You know, they were always praying because they are Christians, so they believe, you know, in prayer. So most of them were always praying and, you know, just saying as it is, like, whoever did this to the child, you know, just prayers. But then others will just look and, you know. So people would start, like, alienating themselves from you because they're thinking, oh, my God, they have the son is crazy. He's not normal. And most of the help you get is not even from family. Most help you get is from friends.
Right, right.
You know, who will try and help, because family will always, like, try to tend and figure. You know, they'll be like, no, you know, you don't have this.
Now, you this happened to you when you're in the U.S., even though you're from Kenya, you were uh-huh. You're currently living in the U.S. I'm speaking to you right now.
Yes.
You're in Nairobi, and we will talk about the reason why you're in Nairobi right now. But when you found out Naftali had autism, do you think your life would have been different or your reaction would have been different, or Naftali's life would have been different if you were, I say, a middle-class family living in Kenya?
In Kenya, I think I would really have had a very tough time. Because of the stigma, you know, I really have a hard time in regards to how he is and the services and the acceptance. In the U.S., I found that it was easier because autism is already, it's really understood. And it's like, it's accepted already. So they don't look at it like it's something like witchcraft, you know, it's something that needs, you know, it needs a lot of intervention and everything. But in Kenya, they will just look and ask questions, who are curious.
Do you travel with Naftali to Kenya? Has he been to Kenya?
Yes, this is the second time.
This is the second time. So you're with him currently in Kenya. What kind of reactions do you see from either family members or friends when they meet Naftali?
Some of them are really, they really are curious. They want to know, what's going on. And some will be like looking, even if you explain it, they really don't understand, like, what is the cause? Or, what really happened? And why he does this, they look at him in a way like, oh, he's just crazy. Mm. And the others will be like really trying to understand exactly why he's like that. So there's always those two different things we try to balance. And the reason why I come with him so that they know, when I'm advocating and doing awareness, I'm doing it because I live it. It's not something I'm just advocating.
So you
without first-hand experience.
Naftali inspired you to be an advocate, speaking out on behalf of children with autism or adults with autism. Basically, try to bring awareness, more awareness to this condition. And this is why you're in Nairobi right now. Can you tell us a little bit about this conference that you're organizing?
So this conference actually is to really bring awareness and to create, we try to see how we can create acceptance to this kind of people, because some of the mandates that the mandatory policies in our country, actually in Africa in general, they really don't include these kids, they don't really include them in so many things. So with this conference, we're trying to provide information about how important it is for early intervention. And also, if there's a way we can try to develop an Afrocentric autism diagnostic tool that can help we as Africans know how to deal with our own people in our own cultural way.
And what would you want a Ministry of Health official in Kenya to know about autism, and what would you want them to do that is not being done right now?
They have the healthcare system. I think they should really provide in everything that the parents are going through, they should be able to accommodate and be able to pay services for these children. Because when you have a child with disability, it's really hard to work. And therapy itself in Kenya is really expensive. There are very few therapists in Kenya. And they charge arm and leg. So for Ministry of Health, if they can come in and say provide services for like occupational, and physical, all these services to children, then the parents really can get a break. Because what time do they go to work and what time do they tend to their children and get money to pay for these services? They should have really a broader accommodation, especially for these children.
If people wanted to follow it, where would they find it?
So if you want to follow you go to our website, www.panafricancongressonautism, it's a one word, .org.
Ruth Denai, thank you.
Nice talking to you. Thank you.
And many thanks to my guests, Ruth Denai and Susan Gakwavu, and to our reporter, Jessica Barman. Thanks to you for tuning in to the show today, whether you're listening in on radio or online, wherever you are in Africa or other parts of the world. And it's our hope that you can continue this conversation. Connect with us on our social media, especially on our Facebook. Go to Facebook and search for Up France Show VOA. Like the page, share with your friends, and leave a comment. We are always updating the page with new information on a range of issues, especially of concern to our audience in Africa and in the diaspora. And remember, as our elders say, even if the cock does not crow, the sun will always rise. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Good day, Africa. Jambaja, jambaja, ba ba ba, ba.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene.